Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Samach Bet Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom, Elam Arava. The Gemara here is dealing with the issue that really comes up in the Mishnah as to why the latter case in the Mishnah, where it says, Ezehu Tarbit, what's an example of Ribit Midrabanan? And the Mishnah goes on to explain a case in which the person had purchased wheat, and then later on, instead of delivering the wheat, he rolls that into a purchase of wine. The Mishnah concludes that it's a problem of ribit midrabanan kishe'ein lo, when he doesn't have it, when he doesn't have it in his possession. So here we have a machloket of Rishonim, which colors their view of how to read the sugya. Rashi says that the ein lo is only modifying or qualifying the yayin in the Mishnah, and therefore the question of the Gemara only relates to the yayin aspect, not to the chita aspect of the Mishnah. In the case of the chita, when he purchased it, he gave him cash for the chita, plus he had seemingly the chita available, and therefore it wasn't an issue at all. The question was with regards to rolling it into the yayin, into the wine, because at that point in time, ein lo, he does not have the wine available immediately for delivery. So Rashi says that's the nature of the question of the Gemara. The Gemara actually reads easier based on Rashi's interpretation. Then the Gemara asks, what's the difference? Rava comes along and says the difference is, in the case of the chita, lakach, he bought it with cash. In the case of the yayin, he bought it on credit. And there's a difference between buying with cash versus buying with credit. And that difference is manifest in the difference between the chita and the yayin in the Mishnah. Then Abaye challenges that understanding because the braita that is brought to support Rava or Rabba's contention. Here there is a machloket as to whether the girsa should be Rabba or Rava, which also is influenced by our Gemara today, which says Elam Rava, whether that's a continuation of Rava's statement above, or it's a new Shita versus the Rabba above. In general, they seem to be pretty similar in nature, the positions, and therefore most of the Rishonim connect between the position we saw yesterday in Rabba and the position we're going to see today in Rava, whether or not the girsa is Rava before. Then Abaye comes along and says, the braita that you brought to support that position says that if you use credit, it doesn't work whether you have it or you don't have it in hand. It makes no difference. And therefore, your understanding of the Mishnah can't be correct. And Abaye offers up an alternative as to why there's a distinction in the Mishnah, which is, Ketani Rav Safra Bibribit Debei Rabbi Chia. It's a case in which he sold him the produce up front at the higher price, and then the buyer sells it back to him at a discounted price. In essence, they created a interest or a discount to the product or the money by doing it through a transaction. And that's what Abaye says. Rava then questions Abaye's understanding of the Mishnah because of the fact that the language of the Mishnah is not supportive of that. So according to Rashi, it reads pretty simply with the Gemara. There are two problems with Rashi's pshat, one of which we'll bump into today, and one of which was raised by Tosafot yesterday, is the fact that the Mishnah up front seems to make the distinction that Rabba indicated yesterday. The Mishnah itself says lakach by the chitim, and then it seems that he's posting it as credit by the yayin. So that seems to be obviously what the Mishnah is saying up front, and therefore, what did Rabba add that wasn't already obvious from the start or outset, because the Gemara is assuming there's a difference between chita and yayin in the first place. So that's one question of Tosafot. The second question that is, by most of the Rishonim, is in today's Gemara, the Gemara is going to ask on Rava's pshat, what do you do with the word lakach in the Mishnah? Which seems to indicate they're not comfortable with the word lakach in the Mishnah because we're explaining it as being bought on credit and not bought with cash. Rashi says no problem, we'll take that out of the girsa. Rashi says it's a mistake in the girsa, it's a girsa mishubeshet, and therefore he eliminates it from the girsa. That makes a lot of Rishonim uncomfortable. And therefore, despite the fact that Rashi's interpretation seems simpler, the Balei Tosafot and many others follow the Rav Hai Gaon, and Rav Hai Gaon indicates that the question of the Gemara on the outset was on both parts of the Mishnah, both on chita and yayin. The Gemara's assumption is that they both have the same traits, whether it's the fact that the market price is readily known, whether it's the fact that he has it in hand or doesn't have it in hand. And that's the Gemara's question. Gemara's question relates both to the chita and to the yayin up front. And that will explain both the difference that Rabba is making over here, because he's distinguishing between the chita and the yayin, And then later on, when the Gemara asks, why does the Mishnah use the Lashon of Lakach? It's understandable, because they think Yayin and Chita are the same. If they're the same, why do you use a different verb by the Chita than you use by the Yayin? And so therefore, they interpret the whole discussion here as being a question both on the Chita and the Yayin on the Mishnah. And in conclusion, they will say that the explanation of the Mishnah is a case where it's also the Chita is subject to the same discussion as the Yayin. Because they say, if Rashi is right, or if Rashi is correct, and one makes a purchase with cash, in a case where the individual has the item in possession, for sure, there's no question that that's fine. And not only is that fine, you could flip that onto something else as credit, because it's as if you have cash in your hand the whole time. And so they don't see that as being a problem in the Mishnah. If you had cash and chita up front, then even the yayin in the back end wouldn't be a problem. And so therefore they explain this whole Gemara based on the fact that the question relates both to the yayin and the chita in the Mishnah. And that's the shita of Rav Haigon. The Rashba has a nice summary of the two shitot, that the shita of Rashi, which he seems to favor and likes, but because of the girsa problem, goes out and follows in the end the shita of the Rav Haigon. Now the Gemara says, Ela Amar Rava, Ki Shachivna, when I pass away, Rabbi Oshaya Nafak Levati, Oshaya is going to come out to greet me, Demetartsana Matnita Kavate, because I set up the Mishnayot like him. We actually saw this together in Baba Kama. He said a similar thing there, where he explained the Mishnah according to a Braita of Rabbi Oshaya. Rabbi Oshaya and Rabbi Chiya are Talmidim of Rabbi. They both have Braitot or Toseftot, which are groups of Braitot that really explicate or explain the Mishnah in more detail. And the Gemara itself says in many places, Braitot that emanate from the Toseftot of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshaya are considered to be validated Braitot, whereas Braitot that come from other sources are more questionable. So before, Rabbah brought a Braita from Rabbi Chiya. The Braita of Rabbi Chiya failed to give us enough information or enough standing to explain the Mishnah. And again, if you think the Gersa over there is Rabbah, the same problem. Now Rabbah comes back with a Braita from Rabbi Oshaya. That Braita has a distinction that Rabbah tried to draw before. And now it's explicit in this Braita, and then that will solve the problem for our Mishnah, which is the Tani Rabbi Oshaya. Hareshaya Noshe Bechaviro Maneh. He was a creditor to his friend for a maneh. Balach Lamad al Gorno. And he goes and he stands by the threshing floor when the guy has his wheat there. Vamar Tainli Ma'utai. I want repayment of the loan. Shani Rotzeli Kachben Chitin. I need to go out and buy wheat now. I want my money back. Why bother? We can take care of this all in one transaction. I have wheat readily available. I'll give it to you. Go out. Let's find out what the readily available market price is for wheat today. And we'll convert the loan into a purchase of the wheat that I have. At the time that it comes for the chitim to be sold, Amarlo ten li chitim. Shani rotze lemochran. Give me my wheat, I'm ready to sell the wheat, and I want to purchase wine. So this is almost a mixture of the Braita that we brought from Bichia yesterday, which talks about a case where there's a loan outstanding, and he goes to the Goren, and he wants to flip the loan into the wheat, and our Mishnah that talks about a case where he purchased wheat, and then later on wants to take delivery of the wheat so he can purchase wine. Amarlo, yeshli yayin, shani noten lecha. He says, don't worry about it. Why bother to go and take the wheat from me, a delivery of the wheat, then sell it, and then use that money in order to buy wine? I can take care of you. I have wine as well. Go out. Let's find out what the readily available market price for wine is currently, and we'll flip the wheat that you bought from me into the wine. The time comes for him to sell the wine. I want my wine, shani rotze lemochro, because I want to sell it. Likach bo shemen, and then to purchase with that oil. Amarlo, shemen yeshli, shani yotein lecha. I also have olive oil that's available for you. Why do we have to go through this whole transaction? Let's take the wine that I owe you. Save us olai, kishar shalachshav. Go out, find out the market price. Kulam, im yeshlo mutar. If he has it in hand, it is mutar. Ein lo asur. If he doesn't have it in hand, it is asur. So here you have exactly what Rabbah had tried to do earlier with the Mishnah, but now it's much more explicit in Rabbi Yoshaya's Breita versus Rabbi Chiya's Breita. Rabbi Chiya's Breita made no distinction as to whether he had it in hand or didn't have it in hand. Over there it said it was asur if you bought on credit, because credit is problematic, irrespective of whether you had possession of the item at the time or not. Over here, Rabbi Yoshaya says you can buy on credit if you have the item in hand. If you don't have the item in hand, the person can't use credit to purchase that which is there. So now, the explanation of our Mishnah is, and according to Rashi, this is referring just to the Yayin, according to the Rav Haigon and the other Rishonim that followed up Shat, that's talking about both the Chita and the Yayin in the Mishnah, which is a case where he's using credit to buy the item that he has in hand. The individual, let's say like Rashi, purchased chitim with cash, and there whether he has the chitim or not is irrelevant, because as long as the market price is already set, if he pays the cash, it's fine, because there's a readily available marketplace and he can go out and purchase it in the market to fulfill his obligation. Later on in the situation or the deal where he wants to come now and take delivery of his chitim, I want to take delivery of the chitim to pay for wine. Guy says, don't bother. I have wine, I'll give you wine. Now he's not going to get cash, because he's just using the outstanding obligation that he has to deliver chitim to buy the yayin. That's buying on credit. You're using an outstanding obligation to purchase the yayin. What Rabbi Yoshaya says is, if you have it in stock, if you have yayin with you, it works. It's not a problem, because you're then transferring the ownership onto the yayin. And that's not a problem. You're flipping the ownership of the chita over to the ownership of the yayin. But in a case where there's no yayin in possession, now he has nothing on which to transfer the ownership of the other individual. Because from chita to yayin, he can't do it. He doesn't have yayin to transfer the ownership onto. But you say, oh, he can go out into the market and buy it at that price. The problem is he doesn't have cash to do that, because the cash was already given to him way back. And whether he's used the cash or whatever he did with the cash, we're not discussing now. But all he has is the outstanding obligation to deliver on the chita. And that outstanding obligation is not going to buy him wine in the marketplace. So then when he flips that position into the yayin, now you have a problem, which is that originally he had money to buy wheat. Today the wheat was trading, like our Mishnah says, at 25 dinar a kesef to the bushel. Now he comes to exchange it onto yayin, it's trading at 30. But if he has yayin, then all he did was he owned the wheat all along, and now he's transferring that ownership into yayin if he has yayin in his possession. But if he doesn't have yayin in his possession, then what you're basically doing is saying that this loan, which was originally for 25, now becomes a loan of 30, and that 30 is going to be transferred onto yayin, which doesn't exist. And that means, in essence, you've created a loan structure by which he originally gave you money, and now, because you waited to take delivery, he's getting more money back. You're creating a situation in which you're transferring or translating the obligation into a loan, and that loan now looks like it bears interest because you're paying out a higher rate than the money that you got originally. So that will be the explanation of the Mishnah, whether you, according to Rashi, that's just referring to Yayin. According to the other Rishonim, that's the same explanation in both the Chita and the Yayin. The permissibility in the Mishnah relates to the fact that there is a Shar that is out there, meaning that there's a readily available market price. But the failure is in the fact that he doesn't have it in his possession. If he has it in his possession, it would work and would not be interest midrabanan. The failure in the Mishnah is that he does not have the chita and he does not have the yayin in there, and he's not using cash to buy it. He's using an outstanding loan or outstanding obligation in order to buy it. And for that reason, it fails. Rashi over here explains why yeshlo it is mutar. What is different between having the item in possession and not having it in possession? I explained the difference is that transference of ownership, which is that instead of it being wheat, he transfers the ownership of the buyer from the wheat into the yayin, which he can do because he has it in possession. Whereas if the yayin is missing, he doesn't have it, then in essence what he's doing is creating an obligation or a loan And then he's trying to mouth say, I'll repay you the loan through wine, but he's making it into an outstanding loan now because he doesn't have what to deliver. But even if you have it in possession, the truth is that there was no kinyan over here. How does that ownership transfer over to the other party? So Rashi says something very interesting over here. Rashi says, Hoyo, im balach zor, kayulai ubemishe para. This goes back to something that Bali HaTosafot said yesterday, which is, why is it when you know the market price and the guy hands you cash, that it's not a problem of rebeat? So Tosafot says, Abu Pishein lezeh, yesh lezeh. Because even if you can't buy it here, you can go somewhere else. Since you can easily fetch it in the marketplace, you could find this. He hands you the money, you can go buy it right now. So what Tosafot says is, the afagav dolo mashach chitim. Even though the buyer never made a kinyan on the chitim, ain ze rebit. It's not considered to be interest. Kevin shayaba mocher lachzor. If the mocher wanted to back out of the transaction, ava b'mishe para. He's subject to mishe para. Olekach chashive k'nitiyakru b'shut alokeach. That's enough to have it be considered as if it went up the value in the hands of the lokeach. If you own the wheat and wheat goes up in price, that's not a problem because you own the wheat. So what we're saying here is that when you hand him money to purchase wheat, then in that case, the wheat, in essence, becomes the buyer's wheat. And the buyer's wheat is what increased in value. And therefore, there's no payment of interest because his wheat is what appreciated. It wasn't the wheat, your wheat that appreciated. Now you're giving him more money back. His wheat. But the question is, how did it become his wheat? He never made a kinyan on it. So Tosafot says the mere fact that he handed over money, even though that's not a full-fledged kinyan, it's enough of a kinyan that you are subject to mishe para, and you're not allowed to back out of such a transaction. That's enough to deem it as if it's yours in this situation to avoid rebeat and say that it appreciated in your possession. Rashi now extends that concept here and says it's true not only where you hand him cash, but it's also true where you are mochel on an outstanding obligation. So in our case, where he has to deliver chitim, he has to deliver wheat, and he doesn't have the wheat now, and he says, listen, instead of me delivering wheat, let's convert that into an obligation to deliver wine. So he takes out an outstanding obligation, which he has to deliver wheat. The guy forgives that obligation, and in forgiving that obligation, they now purchase with that the wine. So what Rashi says is that when you forgive a loan in order to purchase an object, that gives you what's called mishe para. It's the equivalent of handing money over without a kinyan, and that makes you subject to mishe para. You can see the old aleph in the grow over here. We actually discussed this earlier in the Masechta. It's a machloket between the Rambam and the Raivad as to whether the forgiveness of a loan works to generate enough consideration for a kinyan. The Rambam says that when you forgive an outstanding loan that's there, that forgiveness of the loan generates enough consideration to be subject to mishe para, like Rashi says over here. That the mishe para is generated by the fact you forgave the loan. It's the equivalent of handing him cash without a kinyan mishicha. The Raivad says you forgive a loan, it's nothing. It's not enough consideration to create any kinyan or any mishe para whatsoever. So Rashi over here, similar to the Rambam, sees that the forgiveness of a loan, this is one step further than what Tosafot said yesterday. Tosafot said yesterday, if you had cash, even though there's not a full-fledged kinyan, it's enough to subject you to mishe para, that you can't walk away from the transaction, and that gives the buyer ownership in the object, so when it appreciates, he gets the appreciation. Rashi says, now if you forgive a loan, that has the same effect. Not only handing cash, but the forgiveness alone gives you the same acquisition or consideration as handing cash over, even without a kinyan mishicha, that now you own the appreciation in the item. And that's what's happening in this case over here. Every time he forgives the loan, he's now placing that consideration into a new object. That new object is subject to mishe para. Since it's subject to mishe para, the accretion in value is to the buyer, not to the seller, and therefore it's not considered to be rebeat, because he owns it. Every time it goes up in value, he's the one who owns it. Now, that works well for the Rambam, that works well for Rashi's explanation over here. What happens if you believe that that's not correct? Like the Bali HaTosafot early in Masechta, the Raivad, who say the forgiveness of a loan does not necessarily generate consideration to subject you to mishe para. What's interesting is Rashi later on the Mishnah on Ayin Bet Amud Bet actually gives a different reason for why this works. And over there, Rashi says, Kevan to Yeshlo, ein kan rebeat. Since he has it in hand, there is no rebeat. The Ma'achshav hu kanui lo, because it's acquired by him immediately. Afal pishlo mashach, even though he didn't do a kinyan mashicha. Dechi ein lo nami avak rebeat midrabananhu. Because even if he doesn't have it, the reason that it is a sur here is only midrabanan. It's a vak rebeat. Dechi yeshlo lo gazur. And so the Chachamim would not go there that it's rebeat when he has it in hand. So Rashi later on says that the reason this works is not because of the Mishapara that makes it as if he owns it, but rather the whole issue here is only an issue of rebeat midrabanan. In essence, when you buy at the current price for delivery in the future and the price goes up, you didn't really charge him interest. It just looks like interest because the item appreciated in value, and now when he hands you the item that you bought up front and he delivers later, so it looks like you're giving him more money than he gave you. So it's all optical. It's an iser avak ribit midrabanan. And so what Rashi says is that the Chachamim only goes there that when the individual doesn't have the object in hand. When he doesn't have the object in hand, then they say, this looks like you are giving money today and returning more money later on. If you have the object in hand today, then we say, okay, it appreciated for the buyer. It looks like a purchase, a forward purchase, and you're just holding on to the item for him and then delivering it later. That doesn't look like rebeat. And so he says that the difference is not mishapara that locks in the transaction, but simply the gzerat chachamim of this being considered or classified as interest only applies to a case, shenlo, that you don't have it in hand. If you have it in hand, it doesn't look as much like interest. Therefore, the chachamim were not goes there. So that would be the way that the Ravid, Rashi later on, the Balei Tosafot earlier, explain why having it in hand makes a difference. So now that we've explained the Mishnah, the Gemara now asks an interesting question, which is, my lakach. What does the word lakach mean in the Mishnah? According to Rashi, lakach is obvious in the Mishnah. The word lakach is speaking about the chitim, where you paid cash for it. The yayin is a case where you paid for credit. Therefore, the question of the Gemara is unnecessary or meaningless according to Rashi. And that's what Rashi says, V'ni nireh delo garsinanle. This next line in the Gemara, we don't have in the Girsa, Uperush mishubashu. It is a complete mistake, shenitle b'sefer, that fell into the Gemara. Someone else added it in, it's not correct. And therefore Rashi eliminates this Girsa. That's what we said before, why many of the Rishonim lean against Rashi and follow the Rav Haigon is because Rashi has to eliminate this next line from the Gemara. For him, it's not even a question. Chita was lakach, because it was a different case. There was cash paid there. The yayin was a case where it was paid through credit, or the forgiveness of an obligation, and that's why there's a distinction between einlo by yayin versus the chita, whether it doesn't matter whether he yeshlo or einlo, because there was a readily available marketplace, plus there was cash. On the other hand, for Rav Haigon, who says the question was both on the chita and the yayin, the question is, why did the Mishnah change the verbiage between chita, where it says lakach, versus yayin, where it says that harei lecha etzli bahen, like as if he posted the obligation and converted it into yayin. Why don't you use the same language by both of them? So the Gemara says, my lakach, lakach b'halvato. That's what it means. Lakach here doesn't mean he paid cash for it. Lakach means he purchased through debt. And he used the debt to purchase it. And so then, the explanation of the Mishnah is, both by the case of the chita as well as the case of the yayin, you need to have it in possession, because you're purchasing it through the forgiveness of an obligation. You're purchasing it through the flipping of an obligation into this item. So if you have it in possession, it works. Whether that's because of Rashi, because it's subject to Mishapara, or whether it's because of the Rashi later on, it's not a place where the Chachamim made a gzeirah, because it doesn't look so much like interest in that case, once you've done it in that manner, when yeshlo. For either of those reasons, it's not considered to be a vak ribit, but einlo, which is the last line of the Mishnah, refers both to the chitim and the gefen, or the yayin. If you don't have either of them, then you're subject to vak ribit. That's both cases there. And the lakach means he purchased it behalvato. So that's the way to explain the Mishnah according to Rav Haigon and how to have this girsa fit in the Gemara. So Amar Rava, Shmami Nami de Rav Hoshaya Tlat. From Rabbi Hoshaya's din here, you can conclude three things. Shmami Na, so you do have the ability to flip a loan or convert a loan onto product, onto payrot, which is exactly what he's doing, according to Rava, in our Mishnah. Yeshlo, if you have it, it works. Einlo, it doesn't work. we do not say, like the bright that we brought from Rabbi Chia yesterday, that when you don't have money in hand, it doesn't work, irrespective of whether you have the produce in hand or not. Here Rabbi Hoshaya makes the distinction saying it doesn't work when you don't have the produce in hand. It does work when you have the produce in hand. And that's what was going on in the Braita. He was flipping the wheat to the wine to the shemen. By the way, it's just interesting that that's the natural cycle of the agricultural calendar, which is moving from the wheat harvest to the grape harvest to the olive harvest, which is right now close to Hanukkah, the olive harvest. And so therefore he was just moving through the year and kept rolling it over to the next harvest. B'shmaminahu d'yeshlo, and the shmaminah is, of course, that he has it in hand. So the first two really are connected, which is you are allowed to roll a loan into another product. And the answer, b'shmaminahu d'yeshlo, that's only if you have it in hand. I mean, those are the qualifications of how it works. Even if you don't have cash, you're allowed to roll credit, but you're allowed to roll credit only in a situation where you have the other object at hand. B'shmaminahu ita l'Rabbi Yanai. In addition, he must be subscribing to this position, Rabbi Yanai. Dama Rabbi Yanai, malihein, malid mehen. Why does it make a difference whether it's them or it's their monetary payout? Di itmar, you have a machloket amoraim. Rav amar, osim amana b'peirot. You can buy peirot based on credit or an obligation to deliver in the future, as long as there is a readily available market price now. And that doesn't matter whether the price of the chitim go up or don't go up. If there's a readily available market price and you hand him cash, if the price of the chitim go up, it's not a problem at all, and he can deliver you the chitim in the future. But you can't do that for delivery of cash later on. Rav distinguishes in this case between handing him 25 dinari kesef today to buy wheat at the market price for future delivery. In the future, when he comes to deliver, it's worth 30. We say that's not a problem. It went up, the price went up in his possession, and he can deliver him the wheat, even though it's worth 30 today, because at the time that he bought it, he could have gone into the shuk and bought it, and that's enough to give him ownership in it. On the other hand, if he hands him the 25, for future delivery, not of the wheat itself, but the market price of wheat later on, that he can't do that, in that he's buying wheat today for delivery of the value of wheat later on. Today he's buying at 25, he'll get back 30 later on. Rav says that doesn't work, that's damim, that's cash, you can't do it with cash. Rabbi Yonah Amar, malihein, mali d'mehen. Why does it make a difference between whether you do it through a product or you do it through cash? In both instances, you are simulating the same thing. It's all based on the market price of wheat. And in either case, you could have bought the wheat, sold the wheat, and simulated the same thing as handing him 25 and getting 30 back. It's really not different between the cash and the produce. Because in both cases, it has nothing to do with the fact that you handed him 25, you're going to get 30 back. It all has to do with the market price of wheat. And therefore, since it's subject to the market vagaries, meaning that the movement in the market price, and not based on, hey, you're going to get 30 no matter what. And the thing is, you're not really paying him for what we call agar natar, for delaying the repayment of the loan. You're just buying wheat today and getting the wheat price later on. And therefore, Rabbi Yanai says, I'm indifferent between whether you hand me cash at the end or you hand me fruits at the end. You can either hand me wheat, and I'll sell the wheat and get 30, or you can hand me 30 because that's what the wheat is worth. Those are both the same, and it's not considered to be rebeat. As to what the meaning of what Rabbi Yanai says is a machloket between two brothers, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, mali d'mehem, mali hein. The Rashbam says, what's the difference between what you're obligated to deliver, the merchandise you're obligated to deliver, or some other merchandise? And therefore, he says it only, according to Rabbi Yanai, can be delivery of the item you owed or some other merchandise. The other hand, Rabbeinu Tam says that's not what it sounds like. And what it means is that either you take delivery of the merchandise or cash. And that's the way that we're going to continue to explain it, is the way that the Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here. So that is borne out by Rabbi Hoshaya's statement, because Rabbi Hoshaya's statement basically allows you to flip the loan into the produce. By doing that, he's saying, mali hein, mali d'mehen. You don't have to deliver him wheat and then flip the wheat into wine. You simply say, I have an outstanding obligation for wheat. Let's make that, monetize that. What's the monetary value of that? And then we flipped it into the yayin. So we made no distinction between whether you handed him wheat and then flipped it into wine, or whether we just got the price of wheat today, and we use that price to determine how much wine you get at today's market price for wine. And so therefore, Rabbi Yoshaya is clearly supportive of this idea, Rabbi Yanai, that it doesn't make a difference. If the transaction's made as a transaction based on the price of wheat, it's fine then. Then it's not considered to be interest when you get delivery in the back end. Meitavei, from Rabbi Yoshaya, who said before, Kulam im yesh lo mutar. If he has the item in possession, it's mutar to do it. There you have a case where we're flipping the Dmei Chitim into Yayin, or the Dmei Yayin into Shemen. So you see that you are allowed or available to have delivery be made in cash rather than in merchandise. So then, how could Rav over here suggest that Osima Manah B'Peirot, but ain't Osima Manah B'Damim? Rabbi Yoshaya seems to indicate you can do Amanah B'Damim. Mar says, Amravuna, Amarav, B'Shemashach. It's a case where you made a kinyan on the item. That means that he made a kinyan on the wheat up front, so it became his wheat. Outright. And therefore, outright. So now, it became, well, we'll see in a second how outright that is, but he makes a kinyan on the wheat. It becomes his wheat. Therefore, when the value went up, and now he wants to convert it, he's really converting his own cash into something. It's not a case where he is now making it into damim, and then flipping it into yayin. He's actually flipping wheat, his wheat, into yayin. Or he's flipping his yayin into the shemen. So there's no case of you ever made it into money. Because the wheat itself is what you're flipping into the yayin. So now Tosfot says Bisha Mashach. So over here he says interesting. Afilu achlan hamocher. What happens if the seller ate them in the interim? He made a kinyan on them, and now he ate them. Mutar l'shalem chitim acherim. You can replace them with other chitim im yokiru if they went up in value. Below dami the sa'ab sa'ad asur. It's not the equivalent of lending out a sa'ab wheat and then getting a sa'ab back. Mishum dehotam halva'a v'hachazvine. Over there it's a loan, over here it is a transaction. Umishicha dehacha v'avia le'inyan heter pisuk v'lo liknot namash. The kinyan over here is not a formal kinyan like you would say a kinyan mishicha where it makes it his fully and therefore the mocher can't touch it anymore. The only thing that the kinyan does over here makes it into a transaction rather than a loan. And making it into a transaction rather than a loan, it takes away the problem of interest. And so the mishicha over here is not a formal mishicha that makes it into, puts it in his possession, like fully 100%. It's a mishicha that says, we just did a transaction and there's no longer an interest problem here. And so that's what it eliminates. And that's why, according to the Tosfot, the mocher can eat it and replace it with other wheat, because it's not that it's his wheat now. It's just figuratively, it's a transaction where it is his wheat, and therefore when it goes up in price, there's no problem of interest. If you look in Rashi, Bishama Shach Emenu Yichitim Itchila, Tehme Yichitim Didei Kamakabo, Dibi Yershutei Yakir, Dimishashim Ashach, Kalta La Torah Talva'a. The loan is done, Bikibel Chovo V'chein B'kulam. Rashi views the kinyan over here as much being much more formal, as if this is the fulfillment of the obligation when you make the kinyan. It's not simply a way to eliminate the interest problem. It's a way to give you real ownership in the item. And therefore, according to Rashi, it may not be what Tosfot says. You may not be able to eat it or replace it. You might have to keep those chitim. Rashi is difficult from other perspectives because earlier on, Rashi said that the halva, even when you flip it in, remains outstanding. And he does not say that the halva ends with the mishicha. So that's much more difficult. But you see here a difference in perspective as to what the kinyan mishicha does over here. Rashi seems to say that it's a full-fledged kinyan. Tosfot says it's just a figurative kinyan to get rid of the problem of ribit. So Gemara says, Ibisha mashach, tzricha lemeimar. If he did a kinyan mishicha, it's so obvious that it works. I mean, it's so obvious that there's no problem here in doing such. Why do you need the whole bright of Rabbi Oshaya to tell you when you make a kinyan, it works? Elo, shekichon yichad bo keren zavit. It's not a case where there was a formal kinyan, according to Rashi, or a figurative kinyan, according to Tosafot, but rather in a case where he designates a location for this individual's wheat. And he says, that wheat over there, that's his. So even though there's no kinyan mishicha, by designating a specific location, that yichud is miltahi, and it eliminates the problem of ribit, or eliminates the problem of it being a cash issue in the end. Ushmol Amar, Shmuel says, no, we can explain Rabbi Ushayu's case, Hamani, Rabbi Yehuda. That is authored, or it follows the position of Rabbi Yehuda, Damar Sadechad Biribit Mutar. That when there is two possible outcomes of a situation, in one in which you will be subject to interest, and one of them you will not be subject to interest, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not considered to be interest up front. Titania, we have a braita. Arei shaya noshe b'chavero meneh. He is a creditor to his friend for 100 zuz. Basalo sadeu mecher. And he made the field collateral against it, or that he sold him the field and said, if I don't pay you, the field will become yours. Bizman shamukhero chel peirot mutar. When the seller eats the peirot, that is fine. Because over there, we're not sure if the buyer or lender here owns the field until the seller or borrower defaults on the loan. So if the seller in the meantime eats the fruits, that's not a big deal because it's his field until the time that it defaults. And even if you say retroactively, he can pay him for the peirot that he ate. Lokeach ochel peirot asur. On the other hand, if the buyer eats the peirot, then you're at a huge risk of rebate here, because if the individual defaults on the loan, no problem, because he really owned the field all along, and the buyer could have been eating the fruits. The other hand, if he doesn't default on the loan, he pays the money back in the end, all the payroll that he ate along the way, they seem to be interest. They are the equivalent of him paying interest while he was waiting for his loan to be repaid. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af bizman shelokeach ochel peirot mutar. Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the buyer eats the peirot, it's mutar, because it is tzad achad biribit, which means that there are two possible outcomes over here. One outcome will make the eating of the fruits interest. One outcome here will make the eating of the fruits not interest. If he repays the loan in the end, then the eating of the fruits looked like the interest because he ate fruits even though he didn't own the field. The other hand, if he defaults on the loan, and the field became his through that sale in the beginning that created it as collateral for the loan, then the fruits that he ate were his fruits all along. So there are two possible outcomes, one of which results in rebeat, one of which results in not being rebeat. That's sadechad berebeat, and Rabbi Yehuda says that's mutar. And he brings a case that Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Masim Baitus Ben Zonin, there was this incident with this very wealthy individual who generally followed the instructions of the Chachamim, through Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's instructions, he created a transaction similar to what we're discussing. And the buyer in that instance was eating peirot. So that's a proof to me that sadechad biribit works or is mutar. Amrula shamraya said to him that you bring a proof from there. Mochel ochel peirot haya v'lo lokeach. You got the facts of the case incorrect, which is that it was not the buyer who was eating it, but rather the seller that was eating the peirot. And over there, there is no problem. So now what we're suggesting is Rabbi Yoshaya's din can be even in a case where he doesn't make a kinyan on it, or in any case when there's no yichado makom, because there is no certainty over here of rebeat. If he pays him in peirot, then it's considered to be fine and dandy. There's no problem. If he pays him in cash, it could be viewed as rebate. That's what Rav says. Rav says there's a difference whether you pay in fruits or you pay in merchandise, product. There is no interest. Whereas if you pay in cash, then there is, or it is deemed to be, interest. So what that is, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda, sadechad berebit. You have two possible outcomes in the situation. One of them looks like interest, one of them does not look at interest. But since he has the option in the delivery time to either pay in merchandise or pay in cash, the fact that he pays in cash in the end does not matter, because at the time of the Pisuk Ma'ot, at the time that you initiated the transaction, both possibilities were there. And since there's a possible outcome where there will be no interest, then both outcomes don't matter. No matter which outcome you choose, it's not classified or considered to be interest. And that's what it means, tzad echad biribit. Tosafot over here says, well, once you do that, even though at the time that you're paying it, it does look like rebeat. It is a problem of rebeat. Since at the time when you initiated the loan, there were two possible outcomes, one of which was mutar, one of which would have been asur, that makes the whole thing mutar, even if you come to the asur outcome. Vim tomar, if that's the case, imkain sabasa, nami hey mutar, go vote. The Rabbi Yehuda, why isn't then a sabasa mutar according to Rabbi Yehuda? You lend a person wheat up front and he has to repay you wheat later. We said in that case it's not mutar, because if the price of wheat goes up, then it looks like you're giving him back something worth more in the end than you took originally. You borrowed wheat and now you're giving back wheat, and it looks like you borrowed a lower price and giving back a higher price. Why don't we say there that it's tzadachad beribit? Because there it's only ribit if the price of the item goes up in value. If the price is static over that whole period of time, it's not going to be ribit. Why don't we call that tzadachad beribit? There's an outcome where it'll look like ribit. There's an outcome where it will not look like ribit. That should be tzadachad beribit. And it should be mutar according to Rabbi Yehuda. So the Balei Tosafot answer over here, that the Yesh Lomar, the Lo Choshim tzadachad beribit, el dover sheish biyad malve o biyad love lasot. That the only time you call it tzadachad beribit is when there is an active possibility of determining the outcome. Whether it's from the malver, the creditor standpoint, or whether it's from the borrower standpoint, they can influence the outcome. Like in our case, where you can decide to pay in product, or you can decide to pay in cash. That is a decision that is solely up to the loveh, maybe with the permission of the malveh, but it's something that's in their control to make a decision about. In that case, we consider it to be tzadachad beribit, since one of the outcomes that they can determine will be interest-free. Then the other outcome that it does involve interest is not a problem because tzadachad beribit is mutar. The other hand, by the case of the appreciation of the wheat, nobody has control over that. That is subject to market vagaries, whether the market goes up or not. You have no control as to whether the outcome will result or will not result in ribit, and therefore, Tosfot says that's not considered to be tzad echad beribit. Now, on the other hand, there are other Rishonim that explain the difference being the difference between a halva'ah and a zvine. That our cases here are cases where you are purchasing. It's a transaction. So because over here he's handing him cash to buy wheat up front. So it's done not as a loan, but as cash transaction. By sa'a b'sa'ah, you are lending him a sa'ah to get a sa'ah back. It's couched as a halva'ah. And therefore the difference would then be that in Rabbi Yehuda Shita, they believe that tzadachad beribit is only helpful where it is a transaction. It's not helpful where there is a halva'ah. And sa'a b'sa'ah is a halva'ah. Our case is a case of a transaction, and that's the other way Rishonim distinguish between our case and the case of sa'a b'sa'ah. That's why Rabbi Yehuda's din only applies here and does not apply there. The Balei Tosafot suggests the difference is in who has control over the outcome. So, my benayu, what's the difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda over here? And Rabbi, tzadachad beribit, ika benayu. Their machloket is about tzadachad beribit, and as we said before, this is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that tzadachad beribit is mutar. Rav Amar, ribit amanat lachzir ika meinayu. Ribit, with the intention to return it, is what we have between them. Now, what's interesting over here, and Tosafot asked the question, my time at the Rabbanon. What's the reason behind the Rabbanon? If the buyer says, I'll eat the payrot, and if it turns out you don't default on the loan, I'll repay you for all the fruits I ate. Why isn't that a great solution to the problem? That is a way to deal with this issue. The Lokeach says, look, if you default on the loan, the fear was mine all along, I'm eating my payrot, it's fine. If you don't default on the loan, then I'll pay you back for everything I ate. Then why is that deemed to be ribit? We understand Rabbi Yehuda's position as to why that would be mutar. We don't understand the Chachamim's position as to why that would be asur. So Tosfot says, Im tomar, my time of the Rabbanon de Asrei, days of ribit huzeh. What type of ribit is there? When he comes to get it back, he's going to deduct from the amount that he has to repay, the amount that he ate. Basically, he is defeasing the loan based on how much he ate, or he's discounting the repayment amount by how much he ate. So Yesh Lomar, Vada Yimoseke in Lobby Ribit. If he did it that way, it would not be Ribit. Ella, Atzrichalu Froa Tchila Kol. He makes him pay the full amount of the loan back first, and then he gives him back the amount of payroll that he ate. And im lo yuchal lifro lo akol te mishukad biyado. If he can't pay the full amount, it will stay in hand. So what this individual says is, you borrowed 100 from me, you have to pay me back 100. Yes, I ate 20 along the way worth of fruits. No, you can't pay me back 80. If he would have said to him, just pay me back 80, that would work even according to the Chachamim. But when he says, you have to pay back 100, and then I'll give you your 20 back. But that means that if he only has 80, he won't give it back. He'll default on the loan and he'll keep the field. So that already is considered to be problematic according to the Chachamim, because he's really making it that he's taking the interest and then only refunding it after the fact. He's keeping it as a larger sum because that will cause or be a greater reason for default, and so he keeps the greater sum. If he was to defease the loan based on how much he ate and deduct it, it would be totally fine even according to the Chachamim. Their difference here arises from the fact that he's maintaining the full value of the loan, and then only after the fact will refund him the money. Right now, Amar Rava, Hashta Damar Rabbi Yanai. Now that we know that Rabbi Yanai says, Mali Hain, Mali Demehen, in our case, it makes no difference whether you deliver merchandise or you deliver cash. I mean, if the person purchases wheat today at the market price for future delivery, then in the future, Rabbi Yonah says, either you deliver him the wheat, if it goes at a higher price, the market price gone up, you deliver him the wheat, or you give him the cash equivalent. Both of those are fine, according to Rabbi Yonah. So now he says, just like Rabbi Yonah says, in the back end, it makes no difference whether there is wheat or cash. Also, Amrinan, Mali Dmeyem, Mali Hain, Nami Amrinan. In the front end, we say there's no difference between having the item and having the cash. Now over here, Rashi points out the word Hain and Dmeyem change meanings in the two situations. In the first situation, it says Mali Hain. Hain is referring to the fruits or the merchandise. Mali Dmeyem. What's the difference whether you hand him the merchandise or you hand him cash? In the second explanation is Mali Dmeyem. Mali Hain, the Dmehen over there is the Peirot. It's not the cash, it's the Peirot. So what's the difference whether you have Peirot in your possession? Or Mali Hain, what's the difference if you have cash in your possession? So Rashi explains why that difference arises. That difference arises because of the Lashon, or the way that you're viewing it. From the perspective of the Poseik. The Poseik, whenever you use the verb Poseik, that is at the Zman Hashar, that is the time of purchase, the market price at the time of the purchase. On the other hand, when you're talking about the end, and when you are talking about repayment, it's called Pir'on, and the difference is whose perspective you're looking at it from. And therefore, Hafsaka, anytime you use the word Pisuk, it's referencing the beginning of the transaction, and it is from the perspective of the buyer. Whenever you use a Lashon of Pir'on, of repayment, then that's at the end of the transaction, and that follows the perspective of the mocher, the seller. So here, the first case is a case at the end of the transaction, and therefore it's from the perspective of the mocher, the seller. Mali Hain, the seller's obligation is Hain, is the fruits. Mali Dmehem was the difference of the cash. On the other hand, in the beginning of the transaction, when you do it based on psak, pisuk, pisuk is referencing from the perspective of the buyer. And therefore, from the perspective of the buyer, mali dmehen, what is the difference from the buyer's perspective, whether the individual has the fruits in possession, mali hain, or whether he has cash in hand to go out and purchase that which he needs. And so what Rova is in essence saying, and this is something that we're already know, we've discussed this many times, is that there are two options in the beginning of a transaction in order to make it rebate free. One of them is if you're buying for future delivery, if the individual has the item in possession currently, then it's no problem. The same thing is true if he give him cash and he go out in the shuk and buy with that cash whatever it is that he's supposed to deliver. Both of those are mutar because readily available. And in a sense, we almost look at it as if he did purchase it on his behalf. It's as if he went out and did it on his behalf. And therefore, it's as if he owns it and it's appreciating in his possession. The problem now with Rava's statement is, and Rashi notes, is this. Vim Telmar, Mishnatenu Hizu. Isn't this our Mishnah? Our Mishnah later on says, Yatzar Shar. If there is a readily available market price, Poskim. You're allowed to buy for future delivery, even though the guy does not have it in possession. So what's Rava teaching us that we don't already know from our Mishnah? Rashi says that the Mishnah later on is a machloket as to what the Mishnah means. Which market price are we speaking about in the Mishnah? And therefore there's a machloket as to whether you can be posek al ashar. And Rava's coming along to give us a determination that posek al ashar means ashar shala shuk. Means that the ashar of the shuk, when it's readily available, he's passing like that day'ah that suggests that that's the explanation of our Mishnah. It's very interesting because yesterday the Gemara quoted our Mishnah as well. Ein poskin al peirot achi yitzei ashar. Yatzar ashar poskim afu pi yehin lezeh yesh lezeh. Our Gemara says the Tanya. We have a braita indicating that. In the side there, the Ein Mishpat has Tzarech Lamar v'hatznan. It should say our Mishnah. The reason that they quote it as a braita, not our Mishnah, is because our Mishnah says Ein poskin al peirot achi yitzei ashar. That's the end of what our Mishnah says. The braita then continues and says, Yatzar ashar, poskim afu pi shein lezeh, yesh lezeh. It gives the reason behind it. So, they quoted as a braita yesterday in the Gemara. Many suggest that it's our Mishnah, and they embedded in the statement of the Mishnah is the explanation that comes following it. It's not that that's not our Mishnah, it's our Mishnah, but the explanation is obvious, but that's just giving you that explication here, but that's not the fact that we're not quoting the Mishnah. But based on that, what we know, Rava is telling us something that we know already from our Mishnah. Rashi says the difference is that he's telling you who we paskin like. There are two ways to explain the Mishnah. He's telling us who to paskin like. The Bali and Tosafot, on the other hand, say, bring Rashi's interpretation down. And they reject it and suggest that Lo amar Rabbi Yochanan den poskim el b'shuk shel ha'irayot. M'kein eich shmeinim Rabbi Yana de posek ha'shuk shel ha'irayot. What he's coming to suggest over here is that Rava is saying that our Mishnah says that the shuk means the main market price. Based on the main market price, you already can transact. What Rabbi Yana comes to say, according to Rava, is you don't even need a main market price. Even if you have the local city prices already set, that's enough to allow the transaction to go through without a problem. So our Mishnah gives you a din that says that when you have the larger or greater market price, where everyone knows what the market price is, that's when you can transact. Rabbi Yanai comes along, based on Rava, and says not only when it's the general national price, but even when it's a specific city price that's already out, that's enough of a price to allow the transaction to go through without being considered rebeat. And that's the Chiddush of Rav over here, that he's extending the Mishnah to even cases where the market price is in a smaller region. All right, now, Eitve Rav Papa, V'Rav Huna B'Reid Rav Yeshua the Rav. So they challenge Rav's understanding of Rabbi Yanai. Kulam, im yesh lo mutar, im ein lo asur. We quoted before from Rabbi Yoshaya, that if you have it in possession, it works. If you don't have it in possession, it doesn't work. So why should that be the case? Meaning that it should work either way. Because you just said to me, we're indifferent between whether he has cash or whether he has payrot. So he just shouldn't have to have the payrot in possession in order for this to work. Amalu, hotam halva, hacha zvine. The key difference is what we've already discussed before, which is that it's a difference between a loan and a transaction. In the case of the loan, he doesn't have the cash in hand. He's just flipping the loan into a new payout, which is he's giving him merchandise which he doesn't have to repay the loan. In the case of Zvine, where he hands him cash for forward delivery, then he has the cash in hand with which to go out and buy whatever the merchandise is. So it's a difference between Halva'a and Zvine. Rabo v'Rav Yosef, d'amrei tarbayu, ma'itai ma'amru rabbanan poskim ala shar shebashuk. What is the reason behind the fact that you're allowed to buy for future delivery when there is a readily available market price? Because even though he doesn't have it, someone else will have it. And therefore, the buyer can say to him, Damarle, the buyer says, Shkila tivutech, take your niceties and your benefit that you're supposed to be giving to me, Beshadiach Yisrei, and throw it onto the thorns. Ma'anitli, what benefit did you provide to me? Had I had the cash in hand, I could have bought it cheaper in Hini and Zile. So what the buyer is saying to the seller is that, listen, I bought it from you up front. I handed you cash. And at that time, that was the market price. You're coming back to me now and saying, well, the market price went up, so you shouldn't be able to get it at the earlier price. You have to now buy it at the higher market price. The guy says to him, what are you talking about? If I hadn't given you the cash, I'd have the cash in hand right now, and I could go to the villages around the city where they give it at a lower price. There's a discount over there. And I can go get the same price that I bought it from you originally. I can buy it in those locations. So what have you done for me? You've done nothing for me except take my cash, and now I can't buy it. So you better deliver it to me. The same way that I could buy it today for that cash, you better be able to deliver it to me. So this is an additional reason brought by Rabbi Rav Yosef on top of the reasons that we discussed before as to why it's mutar when the market price is out for one to buy for future delivery, even though the individual doesn't have it in hand. As to the necessity for both reasons, the Beit Yosef actually quotes both of these reasons in the Shulchan Aruch. The Achronim discuss why you would need both of these reasons, one of them from the perspective of the buyer, one from the perspective of the mocher, and what each reason adds that the other reason doesn't have. So this, in conjunction with the previous reasons that we had stated as to why it's mutar, give you the possibility of executing on such a transaction and not being considered rebeat. So Amalei Abayda Rav Yosef, Elamiata, Mirutar Levot Sa'ab Sa'ah. If that's the case, then why can't you say the same thing as, if I lend you a sub wheat, and then you return me a sub wheat, why should that be considered interest? The lender can say to him, Shkilati butech v'shadya chizrei, take the supposed benefit that you're giving to me and throw it on the thorns. Would the wheat have rotted if I kept it in my possession? He lends him the wheat and expects to get wheat back. Now all of a sudden you're saying, well, the price of wheat went up. I can't give back that wheat to you at the same price because it looks like interest. The guy says, what do you mean? Had I just kept it in my silo, I'd be able to take the wheat that I paid less for up front and now sell it for more. So just because it was in your silo, why should I get hurt by the fact that it's in your silo? Just because I lent it to you, I should get penalized? So the same way by the money, he says, well, just because I gave you the money, I should be penalized. I'm like, hotam halva, hocha zvine. It's a difference between whether it's done as a loan transaction or a purchase transaction. This has a different meaning than the one we just said before. Before, when we said halva, we meant that it was done through the diversion of an obligation into a purchase. Zvine was the handed in cash. Over here, the difference is in the nature of the transaction. In the case where you're buying for future delivery, it's a purchase, it's a transaction. In that case, you can say to him, you've done no benefit for me. Had I had the cash, I would have been able to get the wheat myself. Therefore, you have to deliver me the wheat the way that you said. But in the case of halva'ah, when it's a loan, the problem is exactly that. You lent him wheat. Since you lent him wheat, then you can't take back more than you gave him because that looks like interest. So here, the problem is in the nature of the original transaction. The nature of the original transaction is either a purchase or a transaction or it is a loan. Versus the explanation before was the difference is how you are making the purchase. Before, they're both transactions, but the transaction is either generated through cash or generated through the forgiveness of a loan. And that's what made the difference before. Here the difference is whether it was a transaction or a loan. Wait a minute, it's not so simple that he could take the same cash that he gave him earlier and now go out and buy it at the same price in these other locations that have cheaper wheat, because he would have to pay someone to deliver the wheat. You'd have to pay someone to bring the wheat from those cheaper places to him. So there is a delivery fee, there is some sort of broker fee that he's going to have to pay to get it to him. When he purchases it up front, he pays them the price plus the broker fee. He embeds that in the original price, and therefore there's no benefit that you're giving him. Even if he doesn't give him the broker fee, people's money act like brokers. Because if people know that this person has cash and he's a willing buyer of wheat, they'll bring the wheat to his house because they want to do the transaction and they know that this guy is a buyer. So they're not going to wait for him to show up in the shuk. They're going to come from the shuk to him to make sure that he buys and they buy his wheat. So he doesn't have to pay for someone to deliver. He'll get free delivery. They'll bring it to his house in order to get his cash. And therefore he doesn't have to pay for that broker fee. And that's why you can say to the guy, you've given me no benefit over here. Since you've given me no benefits, you must deliver what you said you'd deliver, even though the price has appreciated. Right now, Rabbi Rav Yosef, Darmei Tavayu. Ha manda yoiv zuza atara harifa. Someone who purchases for future delivery based on the early market price. As Rashi describes it over here, the harif is a posek al perot, actually yatsa shar habarur. It's before the clear, full-fledged market price has been established. It was shara bachir, shisamuch lekatzir, very close to the harvest, shalukutot machuim bezola. The people who already gathered this stuff in sell it at a cheaper price because it's so early on. It's before there's any market price determined. If you want to sell small quantities or things at that early stage, it's usually sold at a discount. So your person who gives money to buy at that earlier price, tzarech lidchuzei the beidari, he has to show up at the threshing floor. Lamai, why does he have to show up at the threshing floor in order to have that transaction go through? Ela mikna, if it is to make a kinyan, halo kani, he doesn't make a kinyan on it. Just showing up at the threshing floor is not a form of kinyan. You need to do a kinyan mishicha. So why does his showing up make it into a kinyan? If it's to make it so that there is a misha para here, meaning that he can't back out of the transaction, as soon as you hand over cash, you're subject to misha para and you can't back out of the transaction. Gemara says, no, it is to institute that there will be misha para over here, and if the seller backs out of the transaction, he'll be subject to the curse of misha para. But why giving cash should do that? Why does he have to show up? That's because someone who buys at the very early parts of the market, at those early prices, he usually goes to two or three suppliers, and he puts down money with two or three suppliers. Because he's uncertain as to who will have the best quality wheat. He's uncertain as to who will actually get the produce that he needs. So therefore, he buys it from two or three people. So the guy who he buys it from figures, you know, if I don't deliver it to you, someone else will deliver it to you. He figures that he has multiple feelers out there. And therefore, he did this with a couple of people. And so therefore, if I back out of the transaction, no big deal. If he shows up the threshing floor and says, yes, I'm buying from you, that makes it a smichut hadat. The guy knows that it's a real transaction. It's not just this, maybe I'll buy from you. It's not, I'm not just buying an option from you, but I'm actually going to buy from you. Vilo, if he doesn't show up there, Amarle, he said, Amina dashkachat peri de shapire midide vishakalt. I figured you found better quality stuff from someone else and you bought from them, and that's why I'm not going to deliver it to you, because I figured you were just looking at your options, keeping your options open. Amaravashi, Hashda Amar Mishum de Mismach Dato, if the whole reason you have to show up at the threshing floor is to make it clear to him that the transaction is real and not just an option, Avilo Ashkechei Beshukka, even if you find him in the shuk, Vamalei, Sam Chodate, I'm relying on you. That's enough. Meaning that he just needs to indicate him that this is not just feelers that are out there and I'm just going to get from the best quality. So if you default, it's not a problem. As long as he tells him this is a real transaction, that's enough. So he either shows up at the threshing floor or he speaks to him directly and says, listen, I'm relying on you. This is a real transaction. Then he's subject to me, Shapara. And that's why Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef say when you buy at those very early market prices, you must make sure that he knows that this is a real transaction and not simply a way to get the best quality wheat when he figures out who has the best quality wheat later on. Rav Nachman, Kalalala Derivita, Kalagarnatar Leyasur. The principle of rebate is that anything that is a compensation for delay of payment, that is considered to be interest. Now the truth is that Rav Nachman's statement seems very obvious, which is that if you're paying someone in order to delay the repayment of cash, then that is considered to be interest. That is the definition of interest. According to the Shiklu Mekubetz, in the name of the Raivud, this connects to the cases that were brought previously in the Gemara, that even though structurally it might be mutar to collect quote-unquote interest in certain situations, if the shahr has gone out, or if the person has the item in hand, nevertheless, if he specifically stipulates that the money that he's giving to him is in order to garner the benefit in the back end, and the reason that he gets that benefit is because of the fact that he gave him the money early, that already would cause a problem. And that's what Rav Nachman's coming to tell us, that anytime you articulate the reason as being agar natar, even if it's done in a mechanism or process which the Gemara says is fine, that will ruin it if you specifically articulate otherwise. The other way to explain it is the upcoming case that the Gemara is going to bring, which where Rav Nachman seems to indicate that there is interest in situations where it's not as obvious that the extra payment is coming for the delay. I'm Rav Nachman. I'm on the Zuzei Lekira. Someone who gives money to purchase wax, he is buying it today for future delivery. Because dalid. And in that situation, the market price is clearly out there that you get four per whatever amount of money you pay. As she says, four chalot shava, you get four cakes of wax for one zuz, for one dinar kesef. Vamarle yayiv nalacha, hey. He says, I'll give you five chalot of shava for every zuz that you give me. Inuhu gabei, if he has the wax in hand, shori, it's mutar. Lenuhu gabei, asur. If he doesn't have it in hand, it is asur. The Gemara says, pshita, it's obvious that that is the case because one is allowed to discount the price of what they sell. If he has wax in hand and he wants to sell below the market price, that's not a problem because he has the merchandise. Even though he's going to deliver it in the future, he's selling it today. He has the merchandise available. He's simply providing a discount to the individual, and that is mutar. If he does not have the item in hand, it's clear that he's providing the discount because of the delayed delivery. And that means you're handing him cash today. And because you're handing him cash today, he's discounting the price and delivering you more in the future for the benefit of having the cash today and the delivery in the future. Now, Tosfot asks, is that really true? Rav Nachman later on says that that's not considered to be a problem. You're allowed to discount the price. as long as he doesn't frame it in the following manner. As long as he doesn't say, well, if you buy it in the future, I give you 4 prezus. If you pay me today, I give you 5 prezus. So in that way, he makes it clear that there's a difference between paying today and paying in the future. I'll give you more today than I'll give you in the future. That's really indicating that you're giving him more today because of the cash that he's giving you. And therefore, it makes it a problematic transaction. So Tosfot says over here, why is it a problematic transaction? He's just saying to him, listen, I don't have it today, but if you want to buy it, I'll give it to you for 5 prezus. He doesn't indicate if you buy it from me in the future, I'll only give you 4 prezus. He's only giving you a price, one price, which is the discounted price. So Tosfot says that because the market price is 4 prezus, it's the equivalent of it being obvious or outwardly stated that if you buy it in the future, you're going to get 4 because that's what the market price is. If you buy it today, you're going to get the discount. So then the Gemara says, lo, tzricha dile ashray b'mato. It's a case where he has outstanding credit in the city. Someone else owes him money. And he now says, look, if you give me the money now and you pay for it now, I'll give it to you at 5. If you buy it later, he doesn't say this, but it's obvious that if he buys it later, he's not going to get this discount. So the reason that he's taking the money now is he doesn't really need the money, because he could get the money if he went to his debtor and got the collection. So it's the equivalent of the case that we said before, like his kid has the key, you have it in your possession, but it's just that you can't get access to it. So over there, similar to that case where he says, well, until my son shows up with the merchandise, or until I get the key to the warehouse, lend it to me in the interim, but he has what to pay back right away. So to over here, he's getting the money, but he has the way to repay that money immediately because he'll just collect from his debtor and repay it. So maybe it's not borrowing. He doesn't really need the borrowing. Since he has yet to collect on that loan, it's the equivalent of him not having it. It's not just like you're missing the key to get into the storehouse, or your son, when he shows up, will have it. Here is a case where you have to go and actively collect from the other party. Until you've actively collected from it, it's not considered as if you have it in hand. And therefore, your borrowing is necessary because you do not have that cash in hand, and it becomes like a loan. And if it's a loan, it's a problematic that he's discounting the price to you and making it into rebeat. And so therefore, according to Rav Nachman, this is classified as rebeat. We're assuming that it's rebeat derabanan because it was still done in a transactional manner. But that transactional manner makes it into something that's considered to be agar natar. And that might be the chiddush that Rav Nachman is trying to convey to us, is that sometimes agar natar isn't as obvious as you think. But here, the reason that he's taking the discount up front is in order to provide liquidity to him now, to borrow money today and deliver at a later date. And he's willing to discount the price of the merchandise for that. And that's the equivalent of payment of interest, or deemed to be interest, in this situation. All right, we're going to stop here by the 2 dots in the bottom of Samach Gimel Amud Bet.